Hello, everyone. I'm Lucy Commissar. I'm the editor and the chief correspondent of the Commissar Scoop. My guest today is Mark Cohodes, an ex-hedge fund operator who has seen the stock market's dirty business from the inside. Mark got a BS in finance from Babson College, a business school in Wellesley, Massachusetts. In 1985, he took a job in New York with David Rocker, who just started a hedge fund that would come to specialize in short selling. He worked at the hedge fund for 25 years, during which time he became a partner, and when Rocker left, turned the operation into Copper River. He has a reputation of using shorts to spear the bad guys. Now he's a private investor. He lives in Montana. Welcome, Mark. We're going to talk about some history, your history going back to the mid-2000s, and then the present. Viewers will see how your experience has given you a window on some of the big players that run the market and how they do it.
Well, first of all, Lucy, thanks for having me. It was, I'm honored that you would call me and have me on your program. And I have strong opinions on what's going on in these dirty markets. And it's really an honor, Lucy, to talk to you about this, to flush some of this bullshit out.
Mark, let's start by you explaining the difference between shorting and naked shorting, why you think the first is valid, sometimes can do good. For example, you have exposed corruption by companies. In some cases, the company officials ended up being sent to jail for securities fraud.
Naked shorting is flat out illegal, and it's against the law. And a guy like myself, an individual, cannot short a stock, whether you have an account at Goldman, Morgan Stanley, Shearson, Interactive Brokers. You cannot short a stock without a borrow. You cannot enter the order.
Please explain what to short a stock means.
Well, what to short a stock, I always use this to explain the concept of shorting to people as young as 10 years old. If I think the price of cows are too high and I don't own any cows, I go to a cow farm, a cow raiser, and say, can I borrow your cows? I'll give you back your cows at a certain period of time, and I'll give you some interest on the money that the cow is worth. Don't worry, I'm good for it, but I'm just going to borrow your cows. And the farmer says, no problem, you can borrow my cows. I then go in the open market and sell the cows for, let's just say, $100 a piece. Turn over the cows. Price of cows goes down to 50. I buy the cows back, give the cows back to the farmer. I make $50 per cow. If I'm wrong and the price of cows go to 150, And I think I'm wrong. I buy the cows back at 150, return the cows, and I lose $50 per. Now, I can't sell a cow and can't deliver a cow that's not in my possession. So I cannot short a stock. An individual cannot short a stock unless you can borrow the shares. That is flat out, full stop, 100% true. So when people, for example, with GameStop accuse Melvin of being naked short GameStop, it's 100% false. He was not naked short GameStop. He was short GameStop and or short GameStop through derivatives, and he was stupid enough to be too big in that trade, press the trade, and he lost his ass and was brutally and probably mortally from a business career, embarrassed and finished.
That's the name of a company, not a person, correct?
Melvin is the name of a fund, right? Mm-hmm. That was infamously known to be short GameStop. A lot of people accuse him of being naked short the stock. He wasn't. He was just short the stock.
Well, what is naked short then? You explain what short was. What is naked short?
Naked short is shorting a stock without a borrow. It happens to be legal in Canada. It happens to be legal in other parts of the world. It is 100% flat out, full stop, illegal in the United States. Now, there's ways around it that brokerage firms like Goldman Sachs and others use, And I'm not a security regulator, so I can't exactly enforce the laws. But does it go on a brokerage firm level, option market making level? 100% it does. But people like myself and hedge funds and people who short stocks cannot be naked short the stock. If they short a stock, they have got to have the stock borrowed. So anyone who tries to tell you differently is a liar.
Well, okay. So shorting can sometimes is legal and it can do some good. But suppose, even without naked shorting, what about bear raids to torpedo share prices? That is, traders colluding, collaborating, piling on to drive prices down. Or short and distort operations where traders put out fake news to drive prices down. For example, the Street CNBC stock guru Jim Cramer said in an interview, December 2006, a lot of times when I was short at my hedge fund, meaning I needed a stock down, I would create a level of anxiety. Cramer said a hedge fund manager's favorite tactic is to give a rumor about a stock to an unwitting reporter at the Wall Street Journal or CNBC, he said, and hope that it moves the stock in the direction he wants. Cramer said some tactics are, quote, blatantly illegal, but sometimes essential for poorly performing hedge funds. And I want you to take a look at the clip where he says all that.
So let's say I were short. What I would do is I would hit a lot of guys with Vrim. Now, you can't foment. That's a violation of
Vrim?
Yeah, you can't foment. You can't create an impression that a stock's down. But you do it anyway because the SEC doesn't understand
it. Nobody else talked about it.
Right, but what's important when you're in that hedge fund mode is to not do anything remotely truthful, because the truth is so against your view that it's important to create a new truth, to develop a fiction. And I think it's important for people to recognize that the way that the market really works is to have that nexus of hit the brokerage houses with a series of orders that can push it down, then leak it to the press, and then get it on CNBC. That's also very important. And then you have a kind of a vicious cycle down.
Right.
By the way, no one else in the world would ever admit that, but I didn't care.
That's right. And you can say that here.
I'm not going to say it on TV.
Well, he did. Mark, how do you deal with that?
That's an awful lot to boil down. So let's start at the top. Let's get into shorting 101, and then we'll get into Cramer, who now is a big-time guy at CNBC. So I find that video ironic. So I'm going to speak about myself, and I'm going to speak about the 2 to 4 people who I actually think do this properly and do this the right way in this business. So I'm 61 years old. I started doing this in 82 at the Northern Trust. I worked with David Rocker starting in 1985. Moved to California in 91, retired in 2010. Single-handedly, I've probably put more people, more CEOs and operators in prison than anyone in the free world. Single-handedly, I'm probably responsible for more SEC investigations and fines toward companies than anyone alive in the free world. I'm not living on 20 years ago like some. My last person who I went after was a guy named Parker Petit, who was the CEO of MyMedics, and he's going to be going to prison a week from today.
Well, let me ask you a specific, getting back to what Cramer said. You and Rocker Partners were sued in 2005 on just that kind of a charge by Patrick Byrne, who is the CEO of Overstock. He said, on August 8th, 2005, I bought 25,000 shares of OSTK, that's Overstock. My broker was unable to settle the trade and said, Morgan Stanley refused to deliver with statements to the effect that you have to understand this is a very hot stock. By hot, apparently they mean, Byrne said, a stock in which cheating is being allowed. And he said 50 days after the trade, Morgan Stanley finally delivered. Now, 4 days after the fail to deliver, he files suit against Gradient Analytics, Rocker Partners, David Rocker, and you. He said Rocker Partners worked with Gradient, a research firm, to manipulate overstocked shares. He said journalists were involved, and the whole scheme was being orchestrated by a master criminal he called the Sith Lord, but declined to identify. Was the charge true?
Now, people in the Cramer video, if Cramer did that when he was at a hedge fund, it's patently illegal. But that's up to the SEC and the DOJ to do their job. I'm not a law enforcement guy. I don't prosecute people. I can give tips to the government and they're going to go about doing that stuff. But that video about Cramer is absolutely disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. And if it goes on, those people should be banned from the business. And how Cramer has a job at CNBC after that kind of hysterical thing is beyond me. Back in 2005, my ex-partner David Rocker and Patrick Byrne got into a pissing match about the fundamentals at Overstock. And the stock went from somewhere around 40, I think it went to 80. It was a massive squeeze. At the time, we lost our ass and we're losing our ass in Overstock. Overstock was a hard borrow. But as a customer of Goldman Sachs at the time, we had legally borrowed all our shares from Goldman and were paying a very hefty negative rebate, a very hefty negative rebate. I'm offended that you would say this was like what Cramer said. It had nothing to do with what Cramer said, because everything we publicly said about Overstock not only was true, it actually happened. And we had basis for it. So we weren't telling stories to push down the price of Overstock stock. Price of Overstock stock was going up because Byrne was hyping the thing. So I find it offensive that you would say that what we did and why we got sued was what Cramer said. That's 100% false. And I would like you to take that back, Lucy.
Well, no, I'm saying it seemed to the charge was similar. And then I was
the charge had nothing to do with it.
I thought the lawsuit was that Rocker Partners work with Gradient.
The lawsuit was specifically that David Rocker wrote the reports for Gradient and we front ran the reports or did whatever bullshit he accused us of. Right.
I mean, whatever. That's sort of the same thing in different language.
So here's the nature of the story. Byrne got a former employee of Gradient to lie for him in a deposition. I think the guy's name was Anafanis. And Gradient settled with him to get out of the suit. We were sued, we were sued for $1 billion in the lawsuit. And we settled the suit after Byrne lost all his motions. We settled the suit for $7 million, which was less than the cost to take the suit to trial. So when he first asked for $1 billion, he then lowered his offer to $100 million to $50 million. And I said, you'll get no more than $5 million. He said, how about $7 million? And we settled. Now, after that, and years later, after my run-in with Goldman, Byrne felt guilty and then some, and he apologized to me of what he did because he said it was wrong. And he said the crazy part of it is the day after he filed suit, his systems completely blew up and the company fell apart and the stock did go from 80, Lucy, it went to 2. Okay, so what we said about Overstock at the time, everything we said was 100% true. Mm-hmm. But if you've ever been in a lawsuit, and I've been in many on both sides, I've been a defendant and a plaintiff, they're not a lot of fun. And if you can settle something that you're sued for $1 billion for $7 million when it costs you 10 to take it to trial, I think you do that 24/7. So everything that Byrne accused us of was wrong. Everything he accused us of was false. And frankly, when I saw Byrne once during a deposition, we were taking a piss in a bathroom And he was saying that he heard I was a good father. And I said, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I said, you know, Patrick, you have this all wrong. It's not us with the can't borrow the shares. It's not us, because we're being charged to borrow the shares, and we can't short the stock unless we borrow the shares. We cannot short them, Patrick, unless we can borrow them. You should take your issues to the prime brokers. It had everything to do with Burns' view, and he was right about the naked shorting, and naked shorting was not enforced back in that period. The rules changed 2008, 2009-ish, and this was in the 2004-05 period. Rules were very different back then, and rules changed. But Byrne at least had the common sense to listen to me, and instead of going for the hedge funds, he went after the prime brokers. He went after the prime brokers, and he sued Goldman and Merrill and Morgan and all these guys. And it was basically because I told him what was really going on.
Mm-hmm.
So
he filed a suit, just as you said, in 2007 against Goldman and 11 other prime brokers, alleging massive illegal stock market manipulation. The case would go on for 8 years, wasn't settled till 2015. And you would play an important role in it, giving testimony in 2011. So let's look at your connection. Talk about your connection to Goldman. You have said your fund had paid Goldman $100 million over the years to borrow shares. Why did Copper River rely on Goldman to handle short sales, including overstock, rather than perhaps some other broker?
Well, those are really good questions. You have your numbers wrong. We didn't pay Goldman $100 million over the years. We paid Goldman $100 million a year in some years to borrow the shares. Okay. And it used to be in the real world that people's words were good and that people would not actually knowingly break the law for money to enable you to do your business. All Goldman had to say to us at any point in time is, we can't borrow those shares. They synthetically created shares. They didn't have the shares borrowed in retrospect, and they charged us huge fees. We paid huge fees for a service that was never provided. And when the government changed the rules without warning and saying you can't be short stocks for more than 4 days without a borrow, Goldman was absolutely fucked. Absolutely fucked. So instead of finding the shares, which they couldn't find, they bought us in. But the lawsuit that Byrne filed against Goldman stemmed, and Merrill and others, stemmed from the primes, the brokers, not borrowing the shares at that time. And where I played a role in it was I couldn't stand Goldman at the time. I can't stand them now. I think they are just... I don't need to get sued again, but they are a bunch of bad, bad, bad hombres. And anytime the DOJ wants to go after them, I'm more than willing to help. So I couldn't stand Goldman. And at the time, I wasn't exactly pals with Byrne. We later became pals. That's another story for another day. But I couldn't stand Byrne. So I was subpoenaed for this deposition, and I hated the left and I hated the right. I hated Goldman and I hated Byrne.
Can we back up a bit about what Goldman did to you? Because you spoke at the deposition in 2011, but there's stuff that happened in 2008, which I think is important to set the stage about what Goldman was doing even to its own clients. That happened because of the collapse of Lehman Brothers, and you had assets in Lehman Brothers, but it was Lehman Brothers London, and you weren't able to get to your assets. And a whole slew of things happened. Could you talk about that? Because this is where Goldman, who supposedly was your broker and committed to you, seemed to turn against you.
Well, I'll address it. It's always painful to address this shit. But for you, I will. And I want you to remember something, Lucy. Later in the interview, let's bring back Goldman as it relates to Robin Hood, because the situations are very simple, okay? Yeah. So really, in the short version with Goldman is the SEC and government changed the rules on shorting and being able to be short something without a borrow. Goldman didn't have a borrow and basically forced us against our will to cover shares in basically all our names against our will as the market was collapsing. And we took a very wonderful year. We were up 35%. And when the market was flat to up, we had the deal geared to collapse. The market did collapse. But in the meantime, Goldman took us out of our stuff and we closed the year down a mere 50. There have been articles written about this. I urge people to Google me and Goldman Sachs. There's been books written about it. There's been a lot discussed. So anyone who's really interested in what happened with me and Goldman Sachs, there's a lot of places to find it. It was a horrifically bad period. It only occurred because we had collateral that was stuck at Lehman and Goldman knew they could push us around. And people need to know simply that we weren't on margin as the Melvin guys were when they had bad times. But the house, and in this term, it was Goldman, can change margin requirements internally that gives you, in fact, a margin call. So the average house lets you have 30 cents of equity on the dollar for a dollar's worth of equities. That's what Goldman's rule was when you were short stocks. We were only short, let's say, 80% in our fund, so we weren't even fully cashed in. But when we started doing poorly because they ran up our names, they changed the haircut from 30 to 70, which they then said, you know, I tried to raise money and they worked hard against it. They basically said, we have to take you out of our name, out of these names. So Goldman then didn't have to worry about the borrow because we weren't short Boo. And we had one small managed account, which wasn't dependent on Goldman. And I think that fund closed up, or that account closed up, I think 110% that year. And the Goldman stuff was down, I think, 50.
I understand that you tried to get another fund, Farrell and Capital, to take over your position. Yeah. And Goldman prevented that. You tried to go to another bank.
Yeah. Goldman prevented that. Yeah. So everything I did to keep things going, because I thought things were going to collapse and they actually did, Goldman went out of their way to make sure it happened. And the funny thing is, all those people who along the way at Goldman who were in on that decision, shortly thereafter, all left Goldman. They all went to far-reaching parts of the earth. Some are no longer in the business. And again, there have been a lot of lengthy podcasts on this. There's books written about this. There's all sorts of stuff that have all sorts of gory details about Goldman. So I absolutely hate Goldman. I absolutely can't stand them to this day. I draw a lot of parallels right now between Goldman and Citadel. I draw parallels between Goldman and Robin Hood. And as it segues now ask your deposition question.
Okay, well, I want to know, what did it cost you in your business, the firm, yourself, the fact that Goldman did this to your firm and to the stocks?
Well, they basically took a $2 billion business and made it a $1 billion business, and I sent all the money back. Personally, I'm not going to get into the money that it cost me, but it was a nine-figure sum. So it was significant.
You suggested you think they did this because they actually had not borrowed the shares, that you had paid them. And what makes you think that that's the case?
Well, I know it's the case.
How?
I know it's the case because post fact, after I did the deposition for Overstock and Goldman, and Byrne, you know, prevailed eventually, he sent my lawyer information and emails from Goldman where were specifically mentioned where they admit they didn't have the shares borrowed. They admit to everything, which is why Overstock ended up prevailing against Goldman. They admitted to not having the shares borrowed, and we were mentioned by name.
In the time of 08, when Goldman was doing this to you, it was a period when SEC was investigating Goldman on naked shorting. I think at one point they fined them a big $15 million. What should SEC have done? And were you making any complaints about what was going on, what Goldman was doing to you?
Well, let's say the SEC went after Goldman in 2008, 2009. And I need you to go back to this question on my Overstock deposition, right?
I will. We'll get to that. Okay. Yes.
So as it turns out, the dirty little secret, and I have to be careful what I say because I've signed something, because I appealed it. I was the source to the SEC about the Goldman naked shorting. I talked to the office, the SEC out of Chicago, who did the investigation of what Goldman did to us of the naked shorting. And I whistle blew the entire thing after they settled. Goldman settled with the SEC. And I think it took them 5 years and a couple changes in SEC administration to finally reject my whistleblowing thing, my whistleblowing papers, even though I was the guy who exposed Goldman.
Mm-hmm. Now, was this, I know that in 2010, but there may have been more than a few cases, the SEC sued Goldman, accused it of willfully failing to pre-borrow shares as required for short selling in January 2009. And that was shortly after Copper River went out of business. And this case involved 385 short sales, in which the firm had not located shares for its brokerage clients to borrow. Goldman paid $450,000 to settle the case without admitting or denying the accusations. That's under $1,200 a trade. That's hardly below the cost. That's way below the cost of doing business, probably the cost of a nice business dinner. And so meanwhile, the Overstock case against Goldman and Merrill was going on. First, initially, the 12 big brokers, then narrowed to those two. And Overstock charged that Goldman and Merrill failed to borrow its shares. Now, you were not a party to the suit. And since the older suit against Rocker, as you said, you were not pals. You were asked in the deposition if you wanted to help Overstock, and you said absolutely not. But your deposition in that lawsuit is very damning of Goldman, including its use of options conversions to create fake shares to trade or lend out. And I read that Goldman tried to seal your court transcript. How did you find out about the options conversions and how did they work?
What goes on, what you say with your fine, basically I'll simply say crime pays. So whoever is out there watching this, or whoever listens to what I have to say, listen to this carefully. Your brokerage firm does not give a rat's fucking ass about you. Robinhood could care less about you. None of these brokerage firms could care about you. They've all paid significant fines. Citadel's paid huge fines. Robinhood's paid fines. All these guys have paid fines. And it's basically like paying a speeding ticket. They just don't care. They don't care. They don't make changes. They don't give a rat's ass about you. So when we did this deposition, if you will, I couldn't stand Goldman. I couldn't stand Overstock. My lawyer, Shapiro, who was with me at the deposition, told the Goldman lawyer, do not ask Mark about Goldman and what Goldman did with the firm. Stay away from that because that is red meat in front of a jaguar. And sure enough, the lawyer did, and I just lit into him. And I went over exactly how Goldman does business. And you know, these conversions, if you will, are or should be illegal, but there's a little loophole in this that I'll get into later. And basically, if Goldman and or market makers in stocks and in options can be short the stock without a borrow. They can short you stock without them borrowing it. And they sell calls. They sell deep in the money calls for a premium. And they buy deep in the money puts. And they then sell you the fake or created shares where there's no borrow. And you have the shares. And when the borrow gets pulled or bought in, they simply reverse that trade, let's say for June, and roll it to July. And then when the issue happens in July, they roll July into August. So they keep rolling this trade as long as the customer wants it without ever having to deliver the shares. Now, there's a loophole that says market makers do not need to borrow shares to keep, in quotes, air quote, a fair and orderly market. And this is where the so-called naked shorting or shorting without a borrow comes from. Citadel, if they're a market maker in this day and age, can be short all the pick the name you want. And they don't need a borrow and they don't need to pay the borrow fees because if asked, they're maintaining a fair and orderly market. So market makers can legally, and this is the irony of this whole thing, can legally be naked short a stock without a borrow because that is the law and that is the rule. Now, if people want to change the rule, that's a whole different thing. But everyone who's complaining about naked shorting in this day and age, whether it's GME or AMC or things like that, you need to look no further than the market makers. See, back before the SEC changed the rule in 2008, 2009, whenever they were doing it, and prior to then, you could do these option conversions, and they weren't viewed per se as illegal or as illegal as a customer would look at it. So this is very technical stuff. This is done by the higher-ups and computers and people who run these numbers and the Citadels of the world who make markets in options and who do this kind of stuff. They're not breaking the law per se. They're not, because they'll say they're maintaining a fair and orderly market. But one, they're making an absolute fortune doing this. Two, they don't have to pay the huge negative rebate fee that individuals or institutions pay for. And these guys are the true enemy, along with the Cramer types who do what he did in the video you showed. So there's a huge misunderstanding out there about what really goes on. I mean, what really and truly goes on and how it goes on. And it's dirty as hell, and it needs to stop. But I just throw my arms in the air. I'm a 61-year-old guy, and I fought a lot of fights, and I'm a little worn out with some of this bullshit. But you know, it's what goes on. It's sick. It's not right. It's not fair. It's the deck stacked against the Joe Sixpacks of the world, and it's further stacked where the Citadels, who to me are the villains in this show, they would love nothing more than the Reddit crowd to keep fussing about this because it's really not where the bodies and the dead bodies are buried.
Okay. Now, in the deposition, you said in answering the questions that about the company, some companies, and then you indicated Goldman, well, they were like the mafia, and they were running a black box. They didn't know what people didn't know, their clients didn't know the costs. They didn't know any, here's the rate. You want to borrow it? This is the rate. And you said, I think the securities lending market is like the mob. It's rigged, it's manipulated. And you said it was like Goldman. So can you talk about that? What was Goldman doing that made it, aside from the way they treated you, which is certainly not an advertisement for getting more clients, what else might they have been doing that made them like the mob?
Okay. What else they've been doing, I don't know what else they're doing. I just want to speak as it relates to me and what I know.
Yes, yes.
So Goldman is in the business of making money for Goldman. Robinhood's in the business of making money for Robinhood, and Citadel's in the business of making money for Ken Griffin, right? Goldman can loan out Procter & Gamble. Goldman can loan out Philip Morris. Goldman can loan out IBM, and they make 2 or 3 basis points. They make next to nothing. In stocks that are in, quote, hard to borrow or in demand to borrow, the rates can go anywhere from 3% to 100%. And depending on Goldman's cost of creating the share, that's not counterfeiting, that's creating the shares, creating. They figure out what it costs for them to create it in options, puts and calls, to create the shares, to loan them to me. If it costs them 30% annually, they then go and charge me 45. So they make 15% on something that basically they didn't have to even pay me. So they make 40, they make 15%, but I would never get the share. I'm paying them 45, assuming I have legitimate shares, right? I'm paying them 45, assuming that they're paying you 42 to lend me the shares, right? Mm-hmm. I'm legitimately doing it, because if I knew what was going on, I would have never have done it. No one in their right mind would have ever done it. I didn't know that. And the reason I know it is Burns' lawyers sent my lawyers internal emails from Goldman that came out in discovery, where Goldman admitted to what they were doing, admitted to how they figured out the numbers, admitted that this was what they were doing. So when the government pulls out the rug from under Goldman and said, you have to settle in 3 days, Goldman says, we're either going to choke on it, or we might as well put Cohodes and crew out of business, or put them in such a way where they can't fight back. Because I could have fought back, but they prevented me from moving the shares. Mm-hmm. They prevented Farallon from taking our positions. And we had some great positions. But these brokerage firms, where Cramer is right and where Cramer is wrong, is he may have been running his floating crap game while he was at the hedge fund. That's up to you and him to figure out. But it's definitely what the brokerage firms would do to their clients. It's definitely what they would do. It's what they did to me. They've done it to others. They did it to Melvin in this past go round of when it happened to him. And it's,
you cited emails. Let me mention a couple of the emails that you said that you were sent. Mm-hmm. And the reason we know about this, rather funny, you gave a deposition in 2011. So in 2012, the Goldman lawyer, by mistake, attached, he had a motion that aimed to keep the discovery secret that Overstock had gotten. And by mistake, he attached to his motion to keep everything secret some of the secrets that he wanted to keep secret. And so in one, the Goldman clearing operations tells Wolverine Trading, a major client, we will let you fail. In another, dealing with the requirement to locate shares that can be bought to close shorts, but which routinely aren't, as you have said, a Goldman executive says, we have to be careful not to link locates to fails because we have told regulators we can't. So what you have said is backed up now by the discovery that came out then. Now you have said that the only person who has been successful in suing Goldman in the history of the world is Patrick Byrne. His case was filed in state court in California. It mm-hmm. was dismissed by the judge on grounds of jurisdiction and standing. How was he successful?
Because he told them he lost on jurisdictional grounds, and he basically said, fine, I'll sue you cocksuckers in New Jersey. And Goldman wanted no piece of it, especially after that deposition, because more of it would come out. So before Byrne filed it in New Jersey, he settled with them. Mm-hmm. And he settled with them for a tidy sum.
He got $20 million from Goldman, and then a year or so later, $20 million from Merrill Lynch. And now, but you said people don't usually sue Goldman. It takes 5 to 15 years, and who can fight them? They're so powerful. They're so tied to the government. So what is the way?
It is very hard in circa 2021 figuring out the way it is. I mean, the best you can do is try to speak out and try to create attention and try to have your facts right and speak to what you know and don't talk crazy talk and hope people take you seriously. Now, there are a lot of people out there who can make a difference, who take me very seriously in these matters. And I'm not going to get into exactly what I have going on these matters, but I'm going to try to move the needle to help some of these people out. Even though some of these people think it's fun to attack me, we'll see what happens. But if you're going to win, you have to sort of keep your mouth shut. You have to have them think that you're not doing anything and you don't know much. And when there is a time, you strike. And when there is the right time, I will strike.
Now, Hal's, we're at an interesting time, and you talked a little before about Citadel. So let's take the jump. Maybe it's not such a big jump from Goldman to Citadel. How does Citadel compare? How does it compare to Goldman 15 years ago?
Let me just finish off a little bit with some of these things. Goldman now has had their regulatory head kicked in. Mm-hmm. And Goldman used to be thought of as a premium place. It's not thought of as a premium place anymore. It's thought about it as just kind of a bunch of greedy scumbags trying to rip people off. And the company, which used to be a pristine image place, now trades at a very, very, very low multiple. So Goldman's basically had their heads kicked in. They're very highly regulated and sort of the cat's out of the box between that M1DB or whatever they call it and all their chicanery, all the bullshit they've done. People are sort of onto it. And Goldman 2.0, or really 3.0, is Citadel. I mean, Citadel right now is 32 times more dangerous than Goldman ever was because A, he's so leveraged. This is Griffin. And he's a genius, by the way. He is not a dope. He knows exactly what he's doing. He is hugely leveraged. He's tied into every part of the market. He's in hedge fund. He's in trading. He's in market making. He's in ARB. He's in pay for flow. He has every single table at the casino and the eye in the sky and the bank covered. He is on every part of every trade, this guy. And he's hired former government lawyers, officials. He has Bernanke. He used to pay Janet Yellen. He's got everybody. So he has this thing tied and wired soup to nuts.
You said you see all the sides of the trades. This is like a poker game and somebody's going around and looking at all the cards. How can that be legal if you're seeing both sides of the trades?
So, Lucy, as I've said before, I am not a lawyer. I am not a regulator. I do not set the law. I cannot enforce the law. I can just speak my mind. He has all sides of all trades in the names. He has all sides. That is not a debate. And that includes the biggest scam going, which is this payment for order flow. Now, there's experts on payment for flow, and there's experts on options. There's experts on market making. There's experts on all this stuff, right? I'm not an expert on any of it. I know a lot about all of it. And I can help guide whoever needs help through this. But what completely screws up the argument by the Wall Street Bets and Reddit and whatever crowd that has you is you get down these rabbit holes and you can get lost. You know, this whole argument about how many shares are in the float. You know, they keep changing this or they used, extra boxed or extra fail, right? Griffin and Citadel want you to focus on that because it doesn't mean jack fucking shit to anybody. And they basically could say, who cares? What matters and what's key? And if you get in those who are listening to this, and I hope a lot of people do, if you get nothing out of this, I want you to listen to what I'm about to say, okay? When Robin Hood and the long-haired guy who runs it, what's his name?
Vlad?
The greasy guy. Yeah, Vlad. When he was on the Cartoon Network, also known as CNBC that day, he said, you know, there's no margin call. Everything's great. Everything's wonderful. It's business as usual. Everything's fine, right? To then find out hours later that Robinhood had a $3 billion margin call? Something like that. They had a $2 billion, $3 billion something with DTCC where they needed to raise money on an urgent basis overnight through the VC guys. I think that's sort of the timeline. What everyone should ask themselves is, why did Citadel give Melvin money, right? Mm-hmm. As a bailout, because Melvin was about to go under. Why did Citadel give $1 billion or $2 billion or whatever they gave Melvin? Why didn't they just give it to Robinhood? Robinhood's their customer. Robinhood is their guy who they play the payment for flow game. If you and I, right, are as tight can be, and you have a $3 billion margin call, you call me up and say, hey, Mark, we do all this business. Can you loan me $3 billion for a week? Sure, Lucy. What's it going to cost you? I'll give you 10% of my firm, right? I'll give you 10% and I'll pay interest. I'll say, no problem. I'll wire that. You'll have the money in 4.7 seconds as soon as I hit the return key, right? Why would Ken Griffin not have given Robinhood money? Why did they give it to Melvin, who had the absolute wrong side of the trade as everyone from Robinhood? Why? I've never heard anyone bring it up. I've never heard anyone ask the question. I would like to get the greasy-haired guy, Vlad, Griffin, Warren, Senator Warren, Gensler, head of the SEC, all in the room, Melvin in the room, and I'll do the asking of the questions. I'll ask everyone the questions. I'll create the timeline. And everyone can sit there and take notes, and that way we can get to the truth.
What would your answer be? Why did they do that? Why did they?
Because I think Citadel was so upside down in the GameStop, AMC, whatever MEME stock trades that given their leverage, they would have gone under. They would have gone under had this Melvin thing gone another day or so, because there's no reason that a sane person without lying could say, why would Robinhood stop one side of the trades that day? Because what Robinhood did was they completely and utterly destroyed their clients. They completely, when you close one side of the market, the other side of the market, the downside of the market is a huge winner. If you have all buyers and no sellers, stock goes through the roof. When you have all sellers and no buyers, the stock collapses. And in all my years, I'm 61 years old. I've been doing this since I was 16 years old. I've never, ever, ever seen unilaterally one side of a market closed in a normal period. Now, I've seen the markets closed for 9/11. I've seen markets closed on panics. I've seen markets closed on margin. I've seen markets closed for all sorts of reasons. I've never seen one side of a group of stocks closed for a period of time, given the incremental stress that was being built in. And all the excuses around it are nothing but lies, And all these guys do at the end of the day, you know, Robinhood pays this fine, Citadel pays that fine, this guy pays this fine. It's nothing for them. It is lunch money. I mean, Ken Griffin is one of the richest guys in the country. He doesn't bring any good to society. He doesn't help people eat. He doesn't produce anything for any good other than to feather him and his employees' pockets by ripping off others.
Did Citadel's behavior carry a financial risk to the market and to society?
Yeah, I think in the next market collapse, and it could have happened in the prior market collapse in 08, Citadel, every market collapse is the too big to fail guy. I mean, I think Citadel is Bank of America's largest customer in the world. I'd love to see someone prove me wrong on that one. I think they're at least in the top three, but I think they're the largest. They do more business with the big banks and the government than anyone on the planet. And they're so big, and they're too big to fail, and no one wants to shake the apple cart, that they just let it go on. And the irony is, the people who get screwed every time through the test of time is who I call Joe Sixpack. The Robin Hood guys, it'll be the Wall Street Bet guys, people like that, because they get done in by the people with the power, with the connections, with the clout, people who break the rules and laws, and they know they're not going to jail. They know they're not going to jail. They just pay a fine, and they just keep on going.
Now, another one of the big boys that was involved here was Steve Cohn, .72. What role did he play? And by the way, let's go back to the Sith Lord that Patrick Byrne said was involved in promoting and naked shorting his company years ago. And then I heard, was Steve Cohn the Sith Lord? You said you found out about who it was.
Mm-hmm. So first you asked me about SAC. We got to do this. You're asking me these compounded questions.
Yes.
I'm not a fan of his at mm-hmm. all. He's paid $1 billion to the government for things he said he never did. He owns the New York Mets. I can't stand him. I can't stand how he operates, but he is what he is. And maybe one day karma catches his number, but he is not. I am not a fan, never been a fan. So as a postscript, Byrne and I ended up becoming pals. And I ended up buying overstock, and I still own a lot of overstock, and the stock's done really well. And to know Patrick, the most interesting person I've ever known, and I know some interesting people. He's a fascinating person. He is beyond brilliant. He suffers hugely from he's way out on the spectrum. He's socially beyond awkward, things like that. In the Sith Lord, for the drum roll, mm-hmm. right? You can remember this one. The Sith Lord in Byrne's eyes was Milken.
Oh, okay.
The Sith Lord in Byrne's eyes was Michael Milken. Mm-hmm. That's who he thought the Sith Lord actually was. He thought it was Milken. He thought Stevie Cohn was a close number two and was part of it with the hedge fund world. But I told him I can't stand Stevie Cohn and those people who he put up on his chart, most of them I can't stand. I can't stand 90% of the people in the hedge fund business. I think they're all beyond shady. But Byrne thought the Sith Lord was none other than Milken. But, you know, the thing is, so if you're my enemy, you can become my pal. So he became my pal. We're not so great right now. But if you're my pal and you double cross me, you're done for life. You're done. You're absolutely.
What about Stevie Cohn and .72 and the issue we're talking about with what the Citadel was doing and
I think he was involved in GME as well, and Melvin, you know, the fund is run by a guy named Plotkin. And I have no problem with Plotkin. I've talked to him on the phone a couple times. He's a nice guy. He has far more money than brains. He's his arrogance absolutely destroyed him in these names, but I think he's learned his lesson, and I think he's tarnished, and I think he's finished.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people, namely Citadel and SAC or .72 or whatever he calls himself, New York Mets Asset Management, I think those guys all had a hand in that trade. The fact that Citadel is now trying to take its money from Melvin, you know, redeem some of it at the end of September, really tells you all you need to know. They had to give him that money at the time. Otherwise, Melvin would have gone out of business. And if Melvin would have gone out of business, the knock-on effect to it, in my mind, would have been horrific. It would have been good to see, because it would have been good to see these clowns finally go out of business, because they shouldn't be in business. But they wanted to prevent a crisis, so that's what they did.
Mm-hmm. So what dangers exist? So we can wrap up now, but coming to the end, what dangers exist as long as the stock trading program is not fixed? What should the SEC and the Congress do? What should the Justice Department do?
Well, the government should have made me the head of the SEC. That's what they should have done. That was my dream job, but that didn't happen. What the SEC needs to do in the short term is pick low-hanging fruit, and they need to make an example of some of these guys and make an example of them very quickly to show that they're serious about security fraud and some of the trading in these markets. What the government should do immediately is break Citadel up. Citadel is way too big. They're way too leveraged. And I've talked to Elizabeth Warren's people about this and others, and I'm not going to stop. Citadel has a market-making business, which should be broken up. They have a specialist business, which should be broken up. They have a trading business, which should be broken up. They have a hedge fund business. They have all these different businesses, and they should all be separated. Nothing. It should be separated and blown apart, just like they did with AT&T. Because I don't believe in the Chinese wall. They're too big to fail. They're highly leveraged. And these big, big, big companies, especially in the financial world, need to be made bite-sized into smaller outfits. And my solution for all this, and it has absolutely no traction, is something called an excessive leverage tax. Anyone who uses excessive leverage, whether you're a company, whether you're a brokerage firm, whether you're a bank, whether you're a Citadel, whether you're a hedge fund, should be taxed excessively. They should be taxed like in basketball with the luxury tax. You should be taxed into oblivion. One, it would help the deficit. Two, it would raise money for the treasury. Three, it would encourage non-leverage, which would be good. Where it used to be, Lucy, I don't use leverage, right? I have enough problems losing money just in picking names. I don't need to be on leverage to lose extra money. So I think leverage is a huge problem in this system. It's a huge problem because rates are too low. But it's the use of leverage by dangerous players, which is the ultimate problem, which I think is the next financial catastrophe. But hey, who knows? It could be 20 years from now if they keep all this kind of stuff going. But, you know, I'm just trying to concentrate on me. It's a full-time job being me, and I enjoy being me, and you know, I'm getting along. But, you know, I'm just trying, you know, when people either hear my name or they listen to this, I'm just trying to keep it real. I'm trying to keep it really straight, and I'm trying to keep all the clouds out of the way.
Mark, thank you for sharing you with us today and with the viewers, which I think people will be very appreciative, even if they may be a little surprised by what you have said. It's certainly not what they are reading in the public prints, but I would hope that people like Gary Gensler would pay some attention, and people like Elizabeth Warren, and we see where it goes from here. Thank you, Mark. Thank you very much.
Well, Lucy, thanks for having me. Anytime you want to do this, I'm more than happy to do it with a pro like yourself. And I give you a lot of credit for doing this. And I give you a lot of credit for standing up for yourself and trying to speak truth to power. You're a great one, Lucy. And I enjoyed it very much.
Thank you. Thank you. And goodbye, everybody.